Welcome to another message from Columbus First Assembly. Thanks for listening as we strive to learn and live the Word and ways of God. Our hope is that you're encouraged by today's message.
This week in my study and in my reading, I read a story in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes devotional, one of their devotional. And it was about a man by the name of Eric. Eric was a finely tuned football player who went to battle for his team every Friday night. Evan loved football, and the team played hard. It came up to that game where they were going to be playing against their rival, their crosstown rival, their rival who every year it was the battle. Well, this crosstown team actually had one of the best quarterbacks in the state that year, and he was having a fantastic year. So the game is just getting underway. Evan is playing defense at this time, and the coach comes to Evan, and he looks at Evan, and he says, "Evan, look for your opportunity. I don't care when, I don't care what it takes, but you take out that quarterback. You take him out." And at that moment, Evan, first of all, was a bit surprised, but had a decision to make. What was he going to do? Evan thought quickly, and he looked at his coach. Let me quote to you what he said. He said, "I will play my heart out for this team, but I will never intentionally hurt an opponent. I will play my heart out for this team, but I will never intentionally hurt an opponent." Eric's coach was furious, benched him for the game. But Eric stood for his belief. He was an FCA member. He knew what he had to do to stand up for Jesus, to stand up for himself, and to stand up for the gospel, and that caused him to be benched. But he stood. These are the types of responses that we desire to see in our children as they grow and become adults. Because everyone is pressured to compromise in some way or another throughout their life. Here's the question that we've been dealing with. We dealt with it last week. We're going to deal with it this week. Will our children stand for Jesus? Will they stand up for their faith when pressured and tempted to compromise? When pressured and tempted to do something that goes against what Jesus would have them to do? And as parents, we all hope they will. We pray that they will. But do we mold them and train them to give them a foundation in which to stand upon? And that's what I'm hoping to teach a little bit more about today. How do we build a foundation in the lives of our children so that when they are tempted to compromise, they will stand just the way Eric stood? Title of the message is on the screen, Molding Your Child's Life in a World Full of Compromise. We must help our children. We must help them to stand firm. Our text this morning, as it was last week, is from the book of Daniel. It's an Old Testament book. Daniel was an Old Testament prophet. We're only going to be looking at chapter 1. I'd encourage you in your scriptures to turn to Daniel chapter 1. We're going to read this story once again, and I'm going to then continue the points that I started to make last week. Because in Daniel chapter 1, we meet four exceptional young men. Men who, like Eric, took a stand for God when it would have been easier for them to do something else. Easier for them to compromise. Four men took a stand. And what we're looking at is how does a man, when faced with compromise, not cave? What can we do as parents? So, follow along as I read from Daniel chapter 1. During the third year of King Jehoiakim's reign in Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it, and the Lord gave him victory over King Jehoiakim, of Judah and permitted him to take some of the sacred objects of the temple of God. So Nebuchadnezzar took them back to the land of Babylon and placed them in the treasure house of his God. This is a time of judgment for the nation of Israel. Israel is now collapsing as a nation because God has given them over into the hands of their enemies. They had been disobedient to God for decades, even hundreds of years, worshiping idols, not following Yahweh. And God said, I have great mercy for you. However, if you will not do as I say, then I must bring punishment. And that's what's happening here. In verse 3, then the king ordered Aspenaz, his chief of staff, to bring to the palace some of the young men of Judah's royal family and other noble families who had been brought to Babylon as captive. In this day and age, and it may happen even today, when a conquering nation conquers another nation, they take and they make the people their slaves. They can do physical labor, they could do whatever. King Nebuchadnezzar took these young men and he brought them into the palace to be trained as advisors and as individuals to help him run the kingdom. What he was doing, he's looking for the best of the best. And he's now going to put them in service to Babylon. So the king ordered Aspenath, the chief of staff, to bring to the palace some of the young men of Judah's royal family and other noble families who had been brought to Babylon as captives. Select only strong, healthy, and good-looking young men, he said. Make sure they are well-versed in every branch of learning, are gifted with knowledge and good judgment, and are suited to serve in the royal palace. Train these young men in the language and the literature of Babylon. I explained last week that training was to make them Babylonian. They were going to get their language changed. Their culture was going to be changed. They'd been taken away from parents. They'd been taken away from the influences of the land that they came from. They were given new names. Their gods were taken away. They were taken to this land, and they are now being trained when they are at an age to be molded. They were about 15 years old, these men. So they're quite young. I would say possibly similar in maturity to individuals that are 18, 19, or 20 today. So they're trying to mold them, because they're very moldable. And then the king assigned them, this is verse 5, the king assigned them a daily ration of food and wine from his own kitchen. So they're going to be eating the best. The king only ate the best. He had the best meat, he had the best bread, he had the best wine, he had the best. He wanted to make sure that these young men were going to be taken care of and they were going to eat from his table. And they were to be trained for 3 years and then they would enter the royal service. And in verse 6, now we're introduced to four of these men. There were more. There might have been dozens that were brought in and were served the food and were being trained. But we're told of about four of them because these four are exceptional. These four took a stand. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were four of the young men chosen from all from the tribe of Judah. The chief of staff renamed them with these Babylonian names. Daniel was called Belteshazzar, Hananiah was called Shadrach, Mishael was called Meshach, Azariah was called Abednego. But Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given to them by the king. Very possibly the meat was offered to idols. Very possibly it was meat that was not part of his diet growing up. God said there are some animals you may eat and there are some animals you should not eat. He was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given to them by the king. So he asked the chief staff for permission not to eat these unacceptable foods. Now God had given the chief of staff both respect and affection for Daniel, but he responded, I'm afraid of my lord the king who has ordered you to eat this food and wine. If you become pale and thin compared to the other youths your age, I'm afraid the king will have me beheaded. And Daniel spoke to the attendant who had been appointed by the chief of staff to look after Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Please test us for 10 days on a diet of vegetables and water. Daniel said at the end of 10 days, see how we look compared to the other young men who are eating the king's food. Then make your decision in light of what you see. The attendant agreed to Daniel's suggestion and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, Daniel and his three friends looked healthier and better nourished than the young men who had been eating the food assigned to them by the king. So after that, the attendant fed them only vegetables instead of food and wine provided to the other young men. God gave these four young men an unusual aptitude for understanding every aspect of literature and wisdom, and God gave Daniel the special ability to interpret the meaning of visions and dreams. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah took a stand. Weren't arrogant about it. They asked permission to do it, but they took a stand. See, the king could take them out of their country. The king could take them away from their families. He could change their names. But they decided that they would still honor and obey and serve the God Yahweh. Now think about it. Their nation has fallen. The nation that God said he would protect. They have been taken hundreds of miles away to another land. They have an opportunity to live a decent life, a really good life, eating the food of the king, living in the palace. Yet they said, no, we will still serve Yahweh. This could have meant that they would have been taken and made slaves, possibly sent to a work pit. Possibly they could have lost their lives. God protected them, but they took a stand. How do 15-year-old men, how would an 18, a 19, a 20-year-old man, taken away from their family, taken away to a land, as I suggested last week, it could be very similar to sending your kid across country to go to school on the East Coast or the West Coast, or even to go to school 45 miles away in Bloomington. Because when they get there, they are going to now be in a situation where molding is going to take place. Professors are going to attempt to mold their thinking, some of it good, some of it not good. Fraternities and sororities are going to try to mold them in other ways. If it's a party school, the whole atmosphere of the school is going to try to mold them into someone who is a party person. With this molding going on, would your child, would my child be like Daniel and his friends, or be like Eric and say, no, we're still going to serve God? How can we as parents do that? Because here's my assumption. Because the question is, where did these men get this kind of faith? Where did these men get this kind of faith? It is my contention, and I believe that the scripture backs it up, but I cannot point you to chapter or verse. It is my contention that it came from their parents and other leaders and teachers in Israel who were molding them to be men of integrity, men of faith, men who believe in Yahweh, and men who choose to follow God no matter what. So what did the parents do to impart such faith, courage, and integrity into the lives of these men? And here's our question. Hopefully you have a bulletin. This question's in the bulletin. What can I do so that when my child is faced with the pressure to compromise, he or she stands firm? You say, well, Pastor, my children, I don't have any. I'm single. Put these things in your life now because you'll use them later. You say, well, Pastor, my kids are older. They've already made a lot of decisions. They're out of the house. Put these things in your life now because you still have influence on your children. But the younger that you can do this, if you're a young parent this morning, if you are a grandparent who has strong influence in the life of a grandchild, make sure these things are a part of your life. So, how can I mold my child towards a steadfast faith? And before we get to the points, I want to say this. Parents, grandparents, singles, look at me for a second. You can do it. God doesn't ask us to do something. He doesn't instruct us on how to do things that can't be done. I know it seems like it would be difficult, but let's take the example of Daniel and his friends. They were removed from their nation. They were put into another culture. They're slaves. They don't have a choice. Yet they still stood for God. Later, as we study Daniel, and we're studying Daniel on Wednesday night, if you come on Wednesdays after the Dave Reaver presentation, we're going to take a look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, Daniel in the lion's den, because they stood later in their lives to the point of possibly losing their lives. This is a point that I'm going to make on Wednesday night. I'm going to say it today because I'm working on multiple messages. Listen to me. Young people, listen to me. Teenagers, listen to me. The only way you will stand in a situation where the compromise is so big upon you is that you stand in smaller times of compromise. You will never be able to stand like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did, being thrown into a fiery furnace and said, listen, king, if we burn, that's fine, but our God is able. or Daniel who's going to be tossed into a den of hungry lions. You cannot stand if you don't stand on other issues earlier in your life. You will never stand like Eric did when his coach is there at a critical game. He's surrounded by the other 50, 60 members of his football team. The pressure is on to win this game. The coach who has been influencing and investing in his life is saying, take the quarterback out. And let's just face it, we all know that that is not an uncommon request sometime in sports. How does somebody like Eric stand and say, no, I will not take out that quarterback. I'll play my heart out, but I will not purposely injure another player when the coach is in his face? How does he stand? Probably because he stood other times. He stood when he had an overnight at a friend's house, and the movie was inappropriate, and all the friends were laughing at him that he might not want to watch this film, but he took a stand. He took a stand when he had an opportunity when he didn't study for a test. And he had the opportunity because he was well-liked and people didn't want him to fail, but he took a stand and said, no, don't help me. I'll just go ahead and take whatever grade I get. Somebody was influencing him and he took a stand. If you cannot or will not take a stand on the smaller things, when the big things come up, like Eric faced, like Daniel faced, like Mishael, Azariah, and Hananiah faced, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego using their Babylonian names. You will not stand then. And parents, we have to help our kids stand when they're little. So how do we do this? What can I do so that when my child is faced with the pressure to compromise, they stand? I'm going to give you three things this morning. One we talked about last week. I'm only going to hit on it briefly. If you want to listen to last week's message, it's online, and it's on our iTunes podcast. Number one, tell. Tell. You need to tell. What do you need to tell? Psalm 78, 1 through 8, we read. I'm only going to read three verses this morning, starting in verse 4. We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation. They're going to tell the truths about God. We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders. He commanded our ancestors to teach them. What was he commanding the ancestors to teach? Oh, to teach the ways of God, the law of God, the stories of God. He commanded our ancestors to teach them to their children so the next generation might know them, even the children not yet born, and they in turn will teach their own children. God's plan is for the truth of him, the truth of the word of God, the truth of our faith is going to be from one generation to the next generation to the next generation to the next generation passed on. So we tell. What do we tell? This was my suggestion to you. Tell your story. Tell your story to your children. Tell how you got saved. How did God touch you? What were you like before you found God? Some of you have stories you are embarrassed about. You don't really want your children to know those stories. They need to hear your stories because they see you now as a Christ follower. They see you now as committed. Do they know what you were like before? Tell your story. Tell how you got saved. Tell the stories of our faith from the Bible, from the history of other men, great men and women of God, or from your own life. Tell how the Lord is working in your life and family right now. How the Lord has worked in your life and family. Tell what the Lord is currently speaking to you. Tell, tell, tell. Speak about it. Now, I'm going to make a statement here. It's not in your notes. Hear what I'm saying. It's not coming up on the screen. Maybe you have a chance to write this down. It is harder to tell the stories of our faith or to tell what God is working in our lives if talking about the Lord is not a normal part of our family discussions. What sometimes surprises me is how many families who claim to be Christian, I'm assuming are Christian, talk about everything but God. They can talk about the weather. They can talk about politics. They can talk about other people. They can talk about celebrities. They can talk about their favorite movie. They can talk about their hobbies. They can talk about sports. They can talk about the Indy 500. They can talk about the Colts. They can talk about the Pacers. They can talk about all of these things. But when it comes to talking about God, it's like, if it is not comfortable for you to regularly converse in your family. And see, if you and your spouse talk about the things of God, then the kids are just going to overhear it when they're little. And then you'll be able to talk to them about it. But if you have lived your life where it is uncomfortable for you to discuss the things of God outside of church, in church you can talk about it, it seems to be okay, you are going to have a very difficult time fulfilling this. You must learn how. And it might be awkward if you've never done it before, but you must learn how to tell, because you must learn how to comfortably talk about the things of God. It's interesting to me over the years as I've had opportunity either to substitute in some children's ministry before Sherry and I were in ministry, or to do some youth ministry before I was a lead pastor. When you hear a child talking about the things of faith because they've overheard mom and dad talking about it, sometimes they might get a little crooked or a little wrong, but at least they're hearing about it. Tell your children. What can you do so that when your child is faced with the pressure to compromise, they will stand firm? You will tell. And you need to tell them often. Did any of you ever have a parent, or let's back up, many of us are parents. Did any of you ever as a parent use this expression, "How many times do I have to tell you?" How many times do I have to tell you, wash your hands after you use the bathroom? How many times do I have to tell you, don't drink from the milk carton or the orange juice carton? How many times do I have to tell you to say thank you? How many times do I have to tell you to put your napkin in your lap? How many times do I have to tell you, how many times? Because it takes a while before the kid gets it. The same thing happens with the things of faith. Don't be so concerned that you tell the story again, or you tell them this again, or you tell them that again, because it takes a while for children to get this. So we need to tell. Number two, now we're moving forward. Number two, we need to train. Telling is a part of training, but training is a little bit different. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." When we train properly, it impacts our children. I was talking to Casey, and I've also talked to Christy about this. They have a puppy. And the puppy has not been the best of dogs. Anybody who's raised a puppy, it's not them. It's not that they got some kind of a weird dog. That's just what happens with dogs. And do you know what they're doing with their dog? They are helping the dog learn through training. Because they don't want this dog to be demonic its entire life. And I use that term because that is what Christy said. This is a demon dog. And now she's embarrassed. Hey, Christy, you told me. But okay, you weren't the only one, because Casey said it's a demon dog too. Listen, we've had puppies. They're all demon dogs. They're all demon dogs. But the thing about it is, as you train this dog, and you teach it, and you work with it, all of a sudden you end up with a pet. You end up with a pet that when it gets sick, and you have to take it to the vet, and the vet encourages you to put it to sleep, you grieve for days. But if it was still a demon dog, you wouldn't grieve. How did it get there? Because you invested in training. The same thing is with our children. Now, they're not dogs, okay, but they need to be trained. They are not born potty broke. You train them. You go through potty training. You teach them how to eat. You teach them how to use utensils. You teach them those things. But we also need to train them in deeper things. Things of the faith, moral things. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So how do we train? There's four areas. There's more, but let me give you four quick areas as to what's involved in training. Number one, teaching. Teaching. You need to teach your children. You want to teach them selflessness and honesty and kindness. You want to teach them how to treat one another, how to work hard, how to obey the laws of the land, how to be a good citizen, how to pray, how to worship. You teach them these things. Then the second is correction. You need to correct. You need to say, hey, you don't do it this way. My dad had to correct me, and I was corrected. he was really concerned that I might have really screwed up the engine of our car. Dad was teaching me how to change the oil. You know, every young man should know how to change the oil in a car, right? Okay. Well, I wasn't fully changing the oil, but I was filling the oil. He says, you're going to own this car. You're going to have to put oil in. Well, Dad thought he had trained me well, that he had taught me well as to where to put the oil in. So, went and got the 10W30 that was in the garage. I did know what to check. I checked the right dipstick because, you know, guys, there are two. There's one for transmission and there's one for oil. And if you didn't, you need to talk to your dad so this training can take place, or girls too, okay? So I got the right one. Ooh, my oil was down. Quart. So I went and got a quart, and I went and I unscrewed the thing, and I poured it in, but I couldn't get a quart in. I could only get half a quart in. I thought, oh my goodness. Well, that's okay. So I mentioned that to Dad, and he said, what do you mean you couldn't get a quart in? I said, well, I couldn't get a quart in. So now Dad's concerned, rightly so. He said, well, show me where you put it. The brakes. Now, guys, don't laugh at me. I was only 15. Dad had fallen down on his training. And I didn't pay any attention, is really what it was. I had never seen my dad move so quickly. We hadn't started the vehicle, so he hoped we'd be okay. I mean, he got these little suction things. I mean, he did everything possible. I mean, he's sucking all of the brake fluid out. He's sucking out the oil. He's trying to get all of this out. And then we refill that with brake fluid. And then he said, see this one over here that says O-I-L? That's where you put the oil. Okay. I needed to be corrected because I could have caused severe damage. Luckily, he got enough of the oil out and the composition was fine. In fact, I think he made two phone calls to people that he knew that were mechanics. Is my car going to fall apart because of where the oil went? Teaching and correction. The third aspect of training is discipline. I know many of you, many of us, hate the thought of disciplining our children. We love them. We don't want them. Discipline is not punishment. That's number four, which is coming up. We do have to punish them sometime. Discipline, you can bring four up. Discipline is helping them to be disciplined, helping them to self-regulate, to self-control, to be disciplined. And sometimes disciplining requires punishment. We need to teach, we need to correct, we need to discipline, and we need at times to punish. If we're going to train our children in the things that we want them to grow into, it requires us to spend time doing these four things. And I'm not going to spend a great deal of time talking about each of these, but you have to realize that there's work involved. And now I want to tell you, as I did about the telling part, you have to keep doing this over and over again. You have to keep teaching and keep correcting and keep disciplining and keep punishing and keep teaching and keep correcting and keep disciplining and keep punishing until they become molded properly. And remember, we mold them in the things of God. We're not trying to make them into something they're not to be. It's sad when you see a child whose parents have tried to mold them into something that they don't have an aptitude for. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about trying to make a math whiz out of an athlete or an athlete out of a math whiz. But we're going to need to repeat and do these things. So we need to tell them, we need to train them, and then number three, we need to model. Model. Modeling in its essence means we need to live out what we want them to become. John Maxwell, who is a leadership teacher, he's been a pastor, he's spoken a lot, said this many years ago when I was parenting, and I've kept this memorized. He says, you teach what you know, you reproduce what you are. You teach what you know. You reproduce what you are. Parents and grandparents, if you are involved with children, you are, you're not avoiding this, you are reproducing what you are in your children. They may choose to go a different direction, but you are reproducing. You can teach them what you know. I don't know, did your parents ever said, now, you do as I say, not as I... Okay, so you've heard that too. Doesn't work. They're going to do what you do. Why did I smoke? My dad smoked. Why did I move from cigarettes to a pipe? Because my mom said she thought a pipe was sexy. And I thought, well, if my mom thinks a pipe is sexy, then these other girls that I'm trying to attract, because I certainly wouldn't care that my mom thought a pipe was sexy, but... I smoked a pipe for years. I smoked a pipe after I was a believer. Finally got rid of it. I've told you this before. Why did I drink Canadian Club on the Rocks? When I was about 19 years old, I was able to legally drink alcohol. Went out with some friends, and we went to a bar. There was a band playing, an entertainer, and the waitress came around. What are you drinking? And I remember, don't know why you remember these things. I remember one of my friends says, I want a slow gin fizz. Okay. Somebody else wanted a screwdriver, and then the waitress came to me, and she said, what would you like? I'd never had this before. Never had it before. I said, I'd like Canadian Club on the Rocks. So she brought me Canadian Club on the Rocks. I mean, that's straight whiskey over ice, guys. I know I'm talking to this wonderful Pentecostal, evangelical, all you people that you don't know what, you know, a slow gin fizz is or a screwdriver or Canadian Club on the Rocks. So I need to explain these things, right? Of course, I'm with my friends. My other buds are 18, 19 years old. Of course, a slow gin fizz is slow gin over, you know, sweet pop and those type of things. A screwdriver has orange juice, and it's easier to get those things down, vodka and orange juice. Canadian Club's on the Rocks is straight whiskey. And I took my first sip, and it burned. Oh, did it burn. And, of course, I'm in front of my friends here, and I don't want the tears to be coming down or the gagging or the choking, so I swallow, and, ooh, that goes down good. That's what I said. Now, you say, well, why would you even consider drinking Canadian Club on the Rocks? Why didn't you do Jack Daniels? Because Dad drank Canadian Club on the Rocks. And I heard Dad say this. Dad says Canadian Club on the Rocks is a man's drink. And he modeled for me what men do. We model for our children. We teach what we know. We reproduce what we are. By the way, I don't drink Canadian Club on the Rocks anymore, or Jack Daniels, or screwdrivers. But I did then. Why? Because my parents modeled for me. It has been said, I've held this in my heart. I don't know that this is 100% true, but it has been said that what we do in moderation, our children will do in excess. You ever wonder why your kids seem to be doing things that are worse than? Very often, those things that you allow in your life, especially as believers, that you do in moderation, the media that you watch, the movies that you watch, your kids will take it one step farther. Modeling. So how do we model? In the book of Deuteronomy, here's some verses that God gave through Moses to the people of Israel. He said, repeat, and what it was is these commands. Repeat these commands again and again to your children. So this is about the telling, but listen to what it says. Talk about them when you are at home, when you're on the road, when you're going to bed, and when you're getting up. It's like all day long, let this be a part of your lives. Talk, teach, model all day long. Every day, all day, we are modeling to our children how to live for God. Which means, and this is why I said singles, before you even have kids, start living right now, because when you have children, it's going to be harder for you to pull it back the way it should be. A lot of singles think that they can live any way that they want now, but when kids come along, then they're going to finally get their life together. It's going to be far harder. Live properly now. Live properly now. I want to share with you something that I read recently in a book. And this is not necessarily a Christian book. It's a secular book. This quote is in your bulletin coming up on the screen. Sociologist Cody D. Delisteri explored the most recent scientific literature for Atlantic Monthly, the magazine, and discovered, and listen to this, discovered that the single most important element in raising kids who are drug-free, healthy, intelligent, kind human beings is frequent family dinners. The most important predictor of success for an elementary age children is frequent family dinners. The primary factor in shaping vocabulary for younger children is frequent family dinners. The key variable most associated with a lower incident of depressive and suicidal thoughts among 11 to 18-year-olds is frequent family dinners. Now think about it. I just want you to think about this. If frequent family dinners can have such an impact on the development of a child, what will a devoted, passionate life of following Jesus Christ have on the same children? If frequent family dinners will help them to have lower incidence of depressive and suicidal thoughts, and certainly as you're raising your kids, we hope that you would have frequent family dinners. If it's going to help them in their schooling, if it's going to help them to be the type of a child that we are proud to raise in, and they will become good adults. If frequent family dinners can do that, what will a passionate commitment to the Lord Jesus Christ lived out in front of them do? When I said you can do this, folks, you can do this. Yes, it takes time and it takes effort and it takes discipline and it takes consistency, but this is not stuff you can't do. All of us can tell. All of us can train. And all of us can model. And it's not just the modeling in the home. Parents, you need to have partners doing the exact same things I'm asking you to do. I don't believe that Daniel and his friends were only fully impacted by the parents. They were also raised. They went to school. They were impacted by other Jewish leaders. They were impacted by others who invested in them so that when the time came, when they were captured in slaves, they could stand for the Lord. It can be done. But we as a church need to model, but you as parents, you need to partner with us. We make what we make available because we want to partner with you. And when you do not bring your children on Wednesday nights, you are missing an opportunity to partner. When your young people are not coming to midweek youth ministry, you are missing an opportunity to partner. When you are not showing up yourself on Sunday or Wednesday or whenever, you are missing an opportunity to model what type of life you want your kids to be. Don't just send them. Bring them. We are here to partner with you. And please don't just expect that we can do it. It's got to be a partnership amongst us all. But this can be done. So how? Last notes in your thing. How? Start early. Stay consistent. Pray often. Love always. Love your kids always. Pray for them. Pray for them. Pray for them. Start as early as you can in doing these things and the other things God may have for you, and then stay consistent. Many of us, we start early and we go at it, but we don't stay consistent because it's hard, because everything is coming against you and your kids. Well, they want to do this at school, or they want to do that, and that's going to interfere with this. Or they want to do this on the weekends. They want to play sports and go on a traveling team. Sometimes, at some point, you have to stay consistent and start early, pray often and love always, but you might have to say no. And saying no is not the end of the world. In fact, you could be laying that foundation that they're going to need to not compromise later. Because they have to start young, standing for their faith, and they have to have it modeled. Are you standing for your faith? Are you standing for the things of God? Are you organizing your family in such a way that it is honoring God, it's honoring the church, it's honoring Jesus, it's honoring God's word? Are you modeling that for your children? We can do it. We can do it. What am I going to encourage you to do as a team makes their way to the platform? What am I going to encourage you to do? Each one of us needs to ramp up our telling. We need to ramp up our training. Again, partnering with us here at the church. You need to ramp up your modeling. Ramp up your telling. Ramp up your training. Ramp up your modeling. I've been wrestling with whether to share this next bit with you today. Next week, we're not going to be talking about Daniel, but I am still going to be talking about parenting next week. But I think I've got a little time, and I think this is important to hear. What if I can tell you there is one way to significantly increase the possibility of your children staying faithful to the things of God? Just one more thing that you could do that would significantly increase it. If I was to tell you today, or maybe get you privately and say, I have a surefire stock pick for you. I'll tell you what, this is a surefire way to have your investment grow. Or if I was to come and tell you, I have a surefire way that you can lose 10 pounds really quick. Some of you say, hey, what is it? What is it? I have a surefire way for you to influence your children much more strongly that they will stay faithful. And there's research on this, and I don't have all the research for you, but next week I'll take the time and give you some of the websites that have this research. You can Google it yourself. Here's a surefire way to help increase. Remember, this is not going to keep it that way. It's not that other people don't do it without this, but this has been shown through research over the years. It is the disproportional impact fathers have on passing on of faith, or the disproportional impact fathers have on the not passing on of faith. I'm not trying to put guilt on anyone or put a lady who is trying to raise a child in the faith and they don't have a spouse that's helping. But we need to understand that God has given fathers an ability to impact children that is disproportional. Now, again, if the father and the mother aren't combined together, that changes things. Let me just read to you one quote. This is from the Forming Faith. It's a blog. And this quote is taken after a bunch of research was done. And again, I'll give you research next week. I'll put it in the bulletin. But just this quote. The passing on of faith from generation to generation is most powerful and effective when and where mothers and fathers partner together. That is the most effective. When and where mothers and fathers partner together in living out and sharing the Christian faith with their children. In this, both genders play a vital and important role, though somewhat differently and distinctly, it seems. There is a disjunction in faith formation that arises when dads are either not persons of faith themselves, are reluctant to live into the calling that God places upon them as Christian fathers. There is a disproportional influence that fathers have in the not passing on of faith, even if the mother is very passionate. That doesn't mean the father is not a believer, but if they are not living it out regularly, the odds of the child remaining faithful significantly decline, the research shows. Same thing. If the fathers are passionate about following the ways and the things of God, there is a disproportional influence in children remaining faithful. And that's hard because I want to give everyone as much of a word of hope as possible, but I also have to tell you the truth that has been discovered. Dads, God has given you incredible influence. Ramp it up. There is a generation coming up that is going to be forced or influenced to compromise. You have such power and potential to put underneath your children that which will help them to stand. And if you haven't been doing it to this point, start. If you have been doing it to this point, keep it up. If your kids are grown, start anyhow. Because adult children need to see what it is like when their fathers live for God and the things of God. We're going to close, as we did last week, singing, "'Tis So Sweet to Trust in Jesus." I want the words of this song to get into your heart because we need to trust God in all of this. It's not easy. We need God's help. But the Lord says we need to tell them, we need to train them, we need to model. Let's trust His way of parenting so that our children, when the pressure is on, will not compromise. They will stand firm. There's a resource that's in your bulletin coming up on the screen. There's a book that I'd like to recommend to you. It's called For Parents Only. It's a good resource when you're trying to understand what your children are thinking. And there's one last statement in your notes. One last statement. There are some things more important than my child's happiness. And have I as a parent prioritize these. Your kid is not going to be happy about every decision you make, especially if you're leading them in the things of God, because they're going to be around a whole bunch of people whose parents aren't raising them in the things of God, which means they're going to be the odd lady or the odd man out. They might get criticized. They might get teased. And I know we want our kids to be happy, but there are some things more important than your child's happiness. May I say it's your child's salvation. A happy child going to hell. Hello? It's back. A happy child going to hell is not what you want. It takes us as parents to step forward, to step up, and sometimes to say no. Our family is not going to do that because you have a long-term goal. Would you stand? Just follow along as we remind ourselves of our need for Jesus.
You've been listening to a message from Columbus First Assembly. We hope that you've been encouraged in your spiritual journey. If you're not part of a local church and would like to attend one of our regular services, our church is located at the corner of 10th and Iowa Street in Columbus, Indiana. Our Sunday morning worship services start at 10 a.m., and our Wednesday evening studies begin at 7 p.m. And while you're online, check out our website at columbusfirstassembly.org for details and information about our church. You will also find other messages and series that you can listen to or download. Thanks for spending some time with us and for taking advantage of this resource from Columbus First Assembly, where we strive to learn and live the Word and ways of God.